Blog Talk Radio.
When darkness falls and shadows lie, awaken, awaken. When darkness falls and people cry, awaken, awaken. You do not know your time, my friend. Abandon, abandon. When cryptic ends will cross and bend. Abandon, abandon. When nuance fate comes to your gate. Abandon, abandon. When darkness falls and heroes fail, awaken, unbroken. When the sun does rise, no one is on your side. Unshaken, unshaken. The heated cord blows out your door. Abandon, abandon. Sail your ship to better shores. Awaken, awaken.
I wrote that song after watching the Billboard show tonight. You know, like, why sit around and watch other people do shit? Can't we do something? Do we have to be the spectators in the sea of life? So I'm going to sing the song again while I'm waiting for John and Don to show up. Tonight's topics are the Billboard Music Awards, Keith Green's life, and George Stephanopoulos' so-called faux pas.
When darkness fails and shadows lie, awaken, awaken. When darkness falls and people cry, awaken, awaken. You do not know your time, my friend. Abandon, abandon. When cryptic ends will cross and bend. Abandon, abandon. When nuance fate comes to your gate. Abandon, abandon. When darkness falls and heroes fail, awaken, unbroken. When the sun does rise, no one on your side, unshaken, unshaken. The heated cord blows out your door, abandon. Abandon, sail your ship to better shores. Awaken, awaken.
We now have a full house. I'll bring my two co-hosts on. Good evening, Don from Reno and John from Santa Monica.
Hello, good evening.
Greetings,
that was,
Hammer.
That was my Billboard music debut. I wrote a song before the show started.
It was almost as bad as the Billboard intro just now. Okay,
Kiss My
Grits.
It's an original song.
So was Taylor Swift doing her original whatever it was.
It was a song with a rapper. What, John?
I think Groucho Marx, one time they asked him, they said, well, how much
I hear you have a band. He says, yeah, we do. Well, he says, well, how much do you charge? He says, well, it's $5 to rehearse and $10 to play. He said, well, how much does it cost for you not to play? He said, you can't afford that.
Mm. You know, you guys suck. And this show's going to be 3 minutes long, you bullwinkle.
Wait a minute. Nobody else heard that, obviously. Everybody in the nation would be calling you just because they tell you to stop.
May I say one thing? I didn't like being a spectator tonight. I watched 3/4 of the Billboard Music Awards. There were only 2 performances that were excellent, and one was Nick Jonas.
Wow. Well, you know, actually, yeah. I was listening to you sing, and I thought for a second that you were going to keep singing until we both called in, so I had to speed dial it. But I thought you did fine. The thing about music nowadays...
I actually sang the whole song before you guys came on, and then I started over again because you weren't there yet.
I actually dialed in, but I dialed the last the wrong digit. I was doing it off of memory, so I was dialing 1691 or 1692, something like that. So I had to redial a couple times. But you know, when you see these awards show, it's really not about talent level. I mean, most of them are decently talented, but it's who's marketed and promoted properly, and that's what it kind of comes down to with these. Kind of products. If people were looking for musical excellence, they'd be having Beethoven or Chopin or some kind of musical excellence. It's simplicity for the masses.
You know what? One good thing about the Billboards, though, they have a couple awards where a couple of unpredictable people won, like Meghan Trainor won for Best New Hot Song in the Top 100, and. And normally she would have been overshadowed by someone by Taylor Swift. So I was happy to see a couple, she's a chart topper, but she's not the most popular. So it was nice to see her win something tonight.
Yeah, that's excellent because nobody black can win anything in the Academy Awards. But the only time that nobody. Did you hear that word? Nobody black can win the Academy Award.
Viola Davis did. Viola Davis did.
That was 30 years ago. Or 3 years, whichever Hollywood timeline. I know, that's 3 years ago.
She won for The Help.
Honey, that's the regular timeline that we have to. 3 years is 30 years in black years, okay? But anyway, the only time that
How about Halle Berry?
Yeah, that was 45 years ago. But bottom line is that, yeah, what happened this year with two of, the greatest black films probably made in this decade. But anyway, the only time that the awards programs have been exonerated or have been, made right was when, after the whole show, I'd been listening to the Grammys. This, I believe, was 85, 84. It was somewhere in that neighborhood. And not one time was the two singers who sang together, Paul Simon and Garfunkel. And Simon had been off on his own for a couple years and Graceland. And Graceland,
yeah, he's one of my favorites,
year,
by the way.
Graceland was one of the best albums pretty much almost ever made. And it had gotten no Grammy acknowledgement until the very end when they announced it as best album. And that's the only thing that I've seen in probably 45 years of looking at these dumb shows that some show has, I think, gotten it right.
Now, on the Graceland, didn't he have a lot of performers on there that were black? You know, it's kind of, it's like,
he,
I think he's the only
South
person in the band.
He had the whole South African steel drum band, marching band, and orchestra in his album. It was,
right.
It was one of the best albums ever made. And for them to be shut out for all the individual accolades, just to be at the very end the winner of the best album, that was, I thought that was very unfair. Again, maybe pointed at the ethnicity of the album, but that's the only time that I've really seen that these guys have got it right. Otherwise, just like John said earlier, that it's marketing, it's where the money has gone, whose hands it's gone through, who are determined to be the winners of most of these award programs.
The thing is, you guys, you know, we're all biased.
No, we're not biased. Anybody who's a professional, who understands whatever it is, whether it's the fashion or music or television or whatever, you know, the color red, whoever is a professional knows what the best is. It's not subjective. And anybody, if there are other professionals there, they understand that too. That's the thing about politics, is that there's so much turnover with politicians that not one politician can be professional. So we're always in this,
I disagree with that.
Turmoil.
There's a lot of career politicians. We'll get into that next with George Stephanopoulos. But, John, make your case. I just wanted to say that there's about four budding artists who are excellent. Ed Sheeran, Meghan Trainor. There's another guy, not Sam Smith, but somebody else. And there are some really promising new singers. John Legend won Best Song for that romantic song that he's been singing all year. I forget the name of it, but about the curves. But, John, make your case since you're the music expert.
Well, a couple things. First of all, a moment of tribute to B.B. King, who, you know, when you talk about guitars, you know, there's
about
5 to 10 names that just jump right out. You know, you'll hear Hendrix, you'll hear Van Halen, Santana. But when you hear B.B. King, it's like, this brother has been, anytime someone does something for 60, 70 years, and they're doing it until their deathbed, you know, they're like 80 or 90, and they can barely hold a guitar, and they're still doing it, and people pay to see it. Ultimate respect. I mean, just awesome. But what I was going to say, kind of a follow-up, in pro sports, it seems to be that black labor is basically exploited, kind of like slaves, by white team
Not
owners.
Not kind of. It is. It is.
Yeah,
it is.
And I'm wondering...
College is worse.
Well, the question I have, in the entertainment industry, I know there's a few independent people that have done well, Berry Gordy and, you know, other people that have done well that are African-American, but in general, with these corporations that own these companies, music, entertainment, movie, is it still just black labor being exploited by white corporations?
I don't know if you want to call it white, because most of them are Jewish.
You know, I wouldn't call it exploitative when they're making millions of dollars, for Christ's sakes.
But the owners of their properties are making far, far more. When you're talking if you're talking about having your original music, original lyrics, and then you're talking about when you drop a song or an album, and you look at a $2 million income from it, and the person who is bankrolling it is making $20 million, you're talking about 10% of the revenue. Very few people are really happy with original content for 10%. That's highway robbery.
Well, I'll throw in another factor into this, and it happens to white athletes and other, you know, situations like that, but it really hits home hard with the black athlete because most of them come from a very poor income level, single mom. They get some success. They're, you know, they're hunted by in high school and college and by these companies, you know, to basically to use them. They make a lot of money that they're not used to. Now, I'll give you an example. A guy who's, let's say I'm Joe Schmo and I own ABC Company. And I make, you know, $50 million a year off of product. 5 years from now, it doesn't matter if I lose all my hair, I'm still picking and choosing performers to use because I have that power position. It doesn't matter my skill or ability level as a performer. You take a Michael Jackson, an MC Hammer, or whoever, and they're making buku bucks. They're not business people. And suddenly, after 5 or 20 years, some of these artists that don't have that, those high skills, they're one-hit wonders. They're, you know, they have that. They're living a, you know, a $10 million a year lifestyle, and suddenly their next album is a bust, or they go through a divorce and they have health problems. Suddenly they're bankrupt. You know, I mean, look at Michael Jackson was bankrupt. Playing,
several,
you know,
times.
He had
several times, more than once.
He had his tour, that the one that killed him, basically, because he was trying to pay off his debt. You think about this. How can the guy who owns the Beatles catalog be bankrupt, you know? MC Hammer, bankrupt after having $33 million in a year. Amazing.
I don't know,
right?
John. But,
I
realize they have to take responsibility. They did blow their money. But on the other hand, they didn't have the skills. It's just natural to go out, you know, make it rain in the club, to buy a yacht, buy a big mansion, and then your next album doesn't sell. And suddenly you have a divorce, and, you're just SOL.
Right. And they make their beds. Everybody is living the dream. Everybody is living exactly the way God planned it, the way that God wanted it. Everybody's living exactly how they're living. That's why you're not going to see me ever have any real sympathy for people. I have empathy, lots of it. I can feel people. But I don't have sympathy for them because I know that they're living the way they wanted to live under the circumstances of how they were raised and their teens.
Well, you know, what I'm saying is that I understand, like, TLC, the Chili Left Eye and T-Buzz, they got ripped off by Pebbles. There's all those kinds of different stories, but the fact is that it matters. They're still doing better than 10% of the nation. They got their fame. They got their honor. They shared their gifts. So they're, in the long run, they did not suffer as much as the average person.
Okay, whatever you say, even though you've got people like Michael Jackson and Elvis Presley who, you know, these people wanted to die. They wanted to commit suicide for a long time. They weren't happy with their lives. So if money is your measure, I guess they were happy. So, but they're dead now.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I somewhat agree with that. You know, Michael Jackson had 3 kids, and he might have been somewhat unhappy and depressed, but I don't think his whole life was shit.
Well, first of all, if you're dangling a baby over the 7-story hotel,
well, you know, he was kind of clueless in some ways, but he wasn't an idiot.
I have to tell
you, who would dangle a baby over a 7-damn-story building hotel? That's a clue.
I don't know. I guess
scooter.
He wasn't thinking. That's all.
Maybe Michael didn't have
that
dominant
genes. That's a clue. This is not thinking.
Maybe Michael did not have dominant genes, but I could tell you, there's nothing in those kids I see. If you take a picture of Michael Jackson before he went freak show with the surgeries, there's nothing in those kids that look like him. And I don't think they would pass
the
genetic test.
Yeah, the youngest one looks like
We can say adopted are like kids, so don't worry about it. Or in Michael Jackson's case, purchased children are like children.
There you go.
The last one looks like him, and it's his
DNA. So what?
DNA.
Who got a DNA on it?
The last kid Michael Jackson had was a test tube baby, and it has his DNA.
How did they
were
get his
there?
DNA?
Were you there when he started?
It was a sperm mutation. I don't know what they call it.
You just called his kid a mutant. Unbelievable, Jay.
You know, we're getting off topic. You guys are...
What's the topic? I don't even know. How can we get off of something we don't know what we're on?
I was wondering if you guys tapped into that Colorado marijuana tonight.
Well,
but, no, we're in Nevada and California, so how could that happen?
You want to be starting something, how to get over, get up to get under.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
get
anyways, one of the topics tonight was George Stephanopoulos. He gave $75,000 to the Clinton Foundation, and people are losing their rockers over it.
So what? George Stephanopoulos.
They call him a tainted journalist. They call him a liar for bad-mouthing the Clinton all these years and then turning around and supporting their foundation. And his response was, I'm giving to a foundation that helps kids who have AIDS and starving children around the world. What's the problem? Does anybody have a comment?
I think that any politician, when they go up to speak, they should just have they could use an ink that's erasable or something that's just temporary, maybe a henna, but basically stamp their foreheads and just put bought and paid for. You know, not the commercial, the candidate. And that's just kind of the nature of the beast. It's like they're bought and paid for.
Sounds like all the politicians that are still backing Common Core.
But George Stephanopoulos is not a politician. He's an ABC journalist.
Right.
Bought and paid for.
He blew it, but in a way he didn't. Now, the thing is that you got to understand that Stephanopoulos is before he was a freaking commentator, what was he? What was he, James?
He was the
Democrat.
He was the spokesman for the Bill Clinton campaign in 1992.
Duh. Duh. How do you spell duh?
D-U-H.
Wrong, John. Yeah, there you go. Jane was right.
I didn't know they used a D in the front of it.
You guys. The fact of the matter is, I don't think it's wrong, but he failed to report it.
Well, the thing is, he's dealing with the Clintons. Come on, they refused to report everything.
Okay,
the
it
Clintons
says ABC, he's a chief anchor, so he's way up there on the ABC food chain.
He's one
and,
of the top.
You cannot, why did he not disclose it? It's because he didn't want to look biased?
Well, here's something to consider.
He wanted to keep it secret.
Anyone that's involved with media or TV, and I'm talking at a popular level, you know, not the kid that writes for his little college newspaper or some guy who has a blog, website, but I mean ABC, NBC, you turn on Fox Sports, whatever. It's not the news, it's not the sports that they're promoting. They're promoting advertising with a little entertainment or information, watching or listening long enough to hear the commercials. So when you have someone, he's a journalist, he's a this or that, that's fine, but you have to realize they're salesmen for advertising. And if they don't promote that product, because you go, why is this guy on the news? Because he has high ratings. If he has bad ratings, they can him. They don't care how journalistically accurate they are or how informed they are. Do they sell? You know, why do they have the weather girl? Why do they put the sports at the end of the newscast? Because the guys will turn off the TV if they hear the sports at 11 o'clock. Comments on that?
All right. Yeah, no, I mean, because it sounds like what you're saying is that a journalist can be, even a journalist can be bought.
Right.
Okay,
because
and
he
that,
has to have
and
his
and
job.
Also,
and
but
so
you're
he
also
makes
saying
that
you're also saying that he premeditated the fact. You're also saying that he premeditated the fact that bad publicity is better than no publicity at all.
We run into this with the radio show, right? We go, let's talk about Ferguson or something like that, and we go, why? Because it's on the news 24/7. Now we could talk about something else, or it's Baltimore or whatever. And when we see like, oh, 20 people listen, oh, 100 people tune in, it's like, guess what we're going to talk about next week? You know, it affects us too. Now, hopefully, you know, we have some integrity, but we are, you know, biased in that way. It's like, what's, because in the end, if what we're selling or promoting, I should say promoting, isn't being effective, then we have to go to where the public wants and go to their level. Supply.
I think the problem is that Stephanopoulos eight ball the Clintons. He wrote that biography called What I Saw, and it was kind of from a level of an observer, but he also blackballed them in some areas, and now he turns around and he gives the foundation money he claims he gives to a lot of charities, but basically people don't know where he stands. They think he's a phony.
A phony what?
That first he was with the Clintons and he made Bill successful. Then he kind of went behind his back and he went against the Clintons. And now he's been in the media for years and all of a sudden he's back supporting the Clintons. Like, people are kind of curious.
Yeah, I would be too, because Stephanopoulos has been on Clinton's friend's pornography island. You don't think he's been down there with the little boys and girls with Bill and Hillary? I mean, come on now. What goes
what
on in front of the camera?
Pornography island?
They've had the mutual friend of all the other guys, but Rick Perry and all those guys that go ahead that have that island, and the friend has the island, and they all go visit him every so often to get away. And
that's
you don't
creepy.
Think stuff, you don't think Stephanopoulos has been with him before?
I don't
am
really,
I able
to tell you the truth, I don't really care. It's only because
why
it's
not?
An election year.
Well, nobody cares about Stephanopoulos giving $70,000 to the Clinton Foundation either. But you asked.
Well, apparently they do because it's on the Huffington Post, Fox News. The Republicans
people
care because they want to make a fuss out of everything.
Well,
right.
Here's a question, Jane. Jane, is Stephanopoulos a dumb man? An stupid man?
No.
You're breaking up. Are you outside, John?
Yes. That's
okay, you might want to get inside. You might want to get inside, John. Okay.
Okay.
What?
I was
right,
going to say, basically, whatever he did, his decision was educated, calculated, or had some kind of purpose, financial or power or whatever. They don't just you don't give $75,000 just because you are bored. You know, there's obviously a motivation for it.
You go back on the island with the little kids, but you know, the bottom line is that the Clintons have been doing underhanded financial deals for decades, and everybody who's associated with them have their big boy pants on when they did any financial deal with the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation. Everybody knew about this, about the Clintons' finances down there in Arkansas and New York. So this is a big boy pants. Let him deal with it. Let him take the flack. If he's got to get suspended, you know, a la Brian Williams or whatever, he'll take his suspension and come back and be just the same old. He's actually a good journalist, same old good journalist he was before. You know, it hasn't really affected his journalism per se. He's been effective and fair since he's been the anchor, which has been about, what, 11 years now, 12 years? So he's done a very good job despite being a donor to the Clinton Foundation.
Really?
Yes. He's done a very good, a very objective. You know, I'm a journalism major, and when I look at news, which I look at all the time, I look at the news in some form or fashion most of the day. And one of the main things that I critique is fairness, is objectivity as opposed to subjectivity. And it pains me as much as almost anything besides Common Core that the news anchors, the news people have become so opinionated that virtually none of the facts play out in the media. They don't. You don't hear the facts. You have to read and you have to know what you're doing to read between the lines of what they're saying. Because they used to tell you, Walter Cronkite would tell you straight away what the story was about, the, you know, who, what, when, where, why, and how, and just get on with the next story. These guys are talking about how the Republicans have to do this and the Democrats have to do that, and the independents should, you know, be, the libertarians should rule the country, and we don't want to hear any of that. Because we're here to form our, in our free country, our own opinion. That's what we're about.
Right. I think the thing is that it's just an election year and they're just trying to make a big deal out of anything.
Thank you. Ding, 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 ding. You win the prize. I'll be over to bed.
Tell him what she's won, Johnny.
So anyways,
okay,
our topics are a little shallow tonight.
Okay,
what do you guys
let's get into something deeper then. Let's,
for some reason, my studio won't bring the calls up either, which is kind of strange.
Really? Okay, are
yeah,
there
so
callers?
I don't know if we have any live callers right now.
Okay.
Do we have any? Dead callers, maybe?
Right.
We must have a fourth caller because I just looked on the episode page. There's been four callers. So let me see if I can find the studio page again. But anyways, in the meantime, the other topic I was going to bring up is something John and I are familiar with. I was listening to Keith Green the other day. By the way, the studio page just came back up. I don't see the fourth caller right now. You know, John, did you know that Keith Green was born and raised Jewish?
Oh, yeah. And not only
that. His last name is Green. What are you talking about? They're all Jewish.
And not only that, Keith Green was the youngest artist.
Uh-oh. You've got.
Wow.
You're starting to break up really bad, Jane.
We're losing Jane. Can you hear me,
Your
John?
Your phone is... Yeah, I can hear you, John. So,
okay,
what about...
I think Jane's being vaporized by the Clinton campaign.
Nah. Well, it might be, but it might be the fact that she didn't opt out of her SBAC testing or PARC testing for her school. And the NSA is monitoring her call because they might have information in the copyrighted test.
Right.
Anyway,
they might be sharing with the world. They might have the Death Star aimed at her. But
I think so.
In
Minnesota, I think they have two or three of them. But the Somalis are turning into ISIS and they're scared. But did you see the biker shooting? Probably Keith Green was involved in that too. But the biker shooting down in Waco, Texas today. Nine bikers were killed outside of a restaurant. And
were these Hell's Angels bikers or just guys who like to ride bikes?
These were Hell's Angel type. I don't think they're Hell's Angels themselves.
Yeah, because I know there's all kinds. There's the mongrels. They're bad news. There's a whole bunch. Yeah.
See, well, this is down in Texas, so I haven't seen exactly what, but there were 9 of them who were killed, and you know, that's pretty intense when you can get 9 people dead in a shootout. That's a lot of people.
Especially when you figure you're willing to walk out of that and you know, anticipate that that someone knows that you did it and they're going to be coming for you and they're bikers. You know what I mean? That's
no kidding.
Because
you guys,
go ahead.
I lost you for 3 minutes.
Oh, we know you
I
did.
I lost
That's why
you guys for 3 minutes. I went off the line.
Yeah,
because down in Waco, they had the shooting of the bikers, and now the federal government, FBI, CIA, is going to say that the bikers were members of ISIS, so it's now good for them to come down and lock up, you know, give military exercises in Waco.
But Chuck Norris has warned us about this. Chuck's going to defend us because he's Texas Ranger. So we're okay. We're covered.
But except for he's going to have the girl with him and the black dude. Obligatory
right.
Black dude and girl. So they're,
you got to
have
that sidekick, right?
Yep, but they'll be with him to save Texas. But you saw where the governor and the senator and Cruz and everybody's on this, like, white on rice. They're like, oh, my goodness. They're coming to Texas to take us away. And then on the internet, I saw an article yesterday, day before yesterday, that was calling. I mean, this thing is the Daily Cause. This thing was calling all the conspiratorists, theorists, I mean, throughout the entire article, stupid, dumb, lazy, stupid, lazy, dumb, and then stupid. And then I don't think he said he had more than 3 other verbs in that whole article.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, the nouns were onerous, they were odoriferous, and the verbs were just, they were the same vile verbs for just normal people. I mean, the article they were talking about, doggone, the rednecks don't know what they're doing, and they came from another planet, and they shouldn't be coming up with this conspiracy theory because God knows, only God knows, that the military wouldn't think about attacking Texas. I'm reading this. I could say it because I do like the cause, the Daily Cause, KOS. But I mean, this guy who I forgot who the author was. But he was rancid. He was calling the stupid Republicans way more than stupid. I mean, he was calling them stupid, dumb throughout the entire article. Now that's not a journalism style either.
Have we lost Jane again, or she's still there?
No,
What
happened was I'm calling from a land phone. The sound disappeared completely. I was going to call in with my cell phone, then I was trying to hang up, but then it clicked back and I heard your voices again.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't know
back.
Exactly what you're talking about.
Don't worry about it. Right now we're talking about Keith Green and how he was raised a Jew, and I'm asking, who the hell is Keith Green?
Well, he was
actually
a famous singer, one of the best.
Go
ahead, John.
Kind of to fill you in just a little, Keith Green, if I'm not mistaken, was the youngest signed artist to a major record label. I think he was like 5 or 6, and he was actually on, I think it was like the Jack Parr show or something. It was before Carson even. He was on one of those late night shows, and he did his thing on. In fact, it was in black and white if you YouTube it. But he basically was secular in his writing and in his music. And when he got into his 5 or 6 years old, something like, or 7 or 8. You know, it was a very young age. And he basically dabbled with different philosophies and like the typical teenager drugs and things. And he decided, being raised Jewish, he started to look into Christianity. And he became a Christian and was very radical, extremely radical, kind of like a John the Baptist type of attitude. He would say exactly what was on his mind, and he would literally, when he would like chastise an audience, usually come to hear you so you can puff them up and, you know, be complimented, he would just, you know, say what he thought, like, we're hypocrites, we're backslidden, we're, you know, we basically have fallen from God's grace and we need his mercy. And his music is very awesome. His music to me was kind of like vegetables. You know, most vegetables you don't like, they're neutral, but for some reason, some of them are kind of wholesome, like you feel better after eating. Keith Green's music was like that. It wasn't sugary or sappy or anything, but it just felt wholesome and awesome. And he started his own ministry. He got out of his record deal. He was with Word. He wanted to give away his music. So he actually worked a deal with them where they said,
he was 12 years old. He was 12 years old when he had already written 40 songs, could play 3 instruments, and he signed a 5-year contract with Decca Records.
With Decca, there you go. And he basically wanted to give away his music after his first album or two. I think he was with Murr, which was a division of Word. And I think it was Ralph Carmichael owned the label, which would distribute Andre Crouch and the Disciples and a lot of, Edwin Hawkins kind of stuff, a lot of big names. And he decided to let him out of it because he so believed in Keith Green's message. Keith Green actually distributed, he bought some land in Texas, started a ministry kind of like, almost like a commune. It's called Last Days Ministries with his wife Melody. And he basically would give away his albums. If you wrote to him and said you didn't have money for it, he would let you have it for free. And he went to fly food to some poor people. I think it was in Mexico, if I'm not mistaken, but he was in that area. And they had put 9 people in this little small, like 5-passenger plane loaded with food and stuff, and it crashed just off after takeoff in front of his wife and their, I think it was a 1-year-old or so.
He died in 1983.
With his son was on board, who was a couple years old, and another one of his children. His wife was pregnant. And I think on the runway with one of their, probably like a 1 or 2 year old child, and they saw the plane crash, or they heard it crash. And,
that's terrible.
The thing about it is after he died, they had a lot of concerts and tributes with artists, because they were trying to recruit people for Youth with the Mission, because Keith was very much into that ministry. And so thousands of people actually joined these ministries to help people based off of his personal life. But it was for me, it was one of the most tragic. It was a troublesome thing because I was a Christian, very radical, performing on the streets musically, and Keith was like an icon, a role model, and it kind of made us all wonder, like, you know, is God in control? Are we safe? You know, am I really following His will? One of the things I can conclude is if you have a 5-passenger plane, you don't put 9 people in it loaded with supplies. It's just not a good recipe.
Died and 2 lived, and the second one who lived was born after he died. Can I interrupt you guys a minute to play a couple clips of his song?
Is it going to be Buddy Holly? Because he did the same thing.
No, here.
Go ahead. I'm just kidding.
Until today, when you pulled away the clouds that hung like curtains. is on my heart. Well, I've been blind all these wasted years, and I thought I was so wise, but then you took me by surprise. Like waking up from the longest dream, how real it seems, until your love broke through. I've been lost in a fantasy that blinded me, until your love
I think he's excellent. He changed my life.
Whatever.
He did. He's the most powerful. If you hear his song about the sheep and the goats, and there's other ones, Asleep in the Light, Creating Me a Clean...
No.
The sheep and the goats. It's that one's a hilarious song. When I was in college and I was a drunk and I slept with bad men, he turned my life around.
Well, one thing about Keith, he was such
I would call that messing your life up. You were having fun drinking, sleeping around. What the heck is more fun than that? I don't get it.
I'll play the sheep and the goats at the end. Go ahead, John.
Christian circles, Keith Green was kind of the equivalent of, you know, the Black Panthers in the late 60s, Summer of Love, going to San Francisco, Woodstock. He was all of those in the Christian kind of street level thing. That's the influence he had. He was our voice. He was that guy that would stand up to the religious establishment, kind of like Jesus or John the Baptist. Just say, you know, you're hypocrites, you're phonies. You know, like, remember the poor, feed the homeless, and really live it. Like, you know, he sold all his stuff, he bought some land, and he was really just mentoring and discipling people, and he was a really cool dude. I think, though, like most artists, I think, you know, very passionate, but sometimes we make just bad decisions. And I don't know if it was God's will for him to die in a plane crash, but it taught me something very valuable, and that is, no matter what you're doing for God or your mission or purpose, you have to use some wisdom. You know, if someone says, hey, stand on top of a 40-foot building here that we're working on, and it doesn't have a good foundation, it's like, I don't care what your mission is, don't get on it, you know? And it actually helped me.
Sounds like an airplane full of food, dumbass.
Yeah, it's like,
what?
You know, for me, it's like it taught me that no matter how righteous or how cool the mission, you got to use your brains. Even if the pilot says everything's cool, you go, wait a second. You know,
you got
now,
nine people and a whole bunch of food.
Yeah, because, I mean, Roberto Clemente, remember the baseball player? And, he died in a plane crash trying to bring, food to the poor. It's like, not a good move, you know.
The thing is that from a young age, he was in this play, like at age 6, and even the L.A. Times noticed him. He's just multi-talented, passionate, powerful. And he's the best Christian artist in my mind. I like B.J. Thomas, and I like B.J. Thomas and Randy Stonehill, but I don't think no one can compare to his talent, except for David Archuleta, actually.
Well, I would say, though, as far as influence in the Christian, music field, the Elvis of gospel music, or Christian music, I should say, rock especially, was Larry Norman. He paved the whole way, and he took all the heat. A lot of people don't know about Larry Norman, but he basically, like Elvis, Elvis paved the way. Now, he didn't invent black music, and he didn't invent rock and roll, but he took it, mainstream, where white America could, safely embrace it. It's kind of the same with Larry. He took it from the secular world and brought it to the church, and they stoned him for it, but he took the blows, and I appreciate it.
Right. I know you like Larry Norman. He's probably more your style, but basically, I wasn't that in tune with Larry Norman.
Here's the key to it. There wasn't Christian labels when Larry Norman came along, and for rock and for pop and the rap and all this stuff. No one did that stuff. It was all gospel quartet, you know, Southern gospel stuff and country and Oak Ridge Boys and that kind of stuff. You know, Billy Graham Crusade. Larry was the first guy to go to Hollywood. Like you mentioned Randy Stonehill. There wouldn't be a Randy Stonehill without Larry Norman leading him to Christ and then actually recording him and putting him on a label. All these bands and stuff, these, you know, when Word came up with these different labels, it's because people like Larry paved the way for them. And so that's what I'm saying is, you know, even Keith Green, he was, with, I believe, with Myrrh. That was a offshoot of Word, if I'm not mistaken, records. And that all that stuff was influenced by these Trailblazers.
Right.
In fact, Andre Crouch, when he was signed with Ralph Carmichael, I think his second album or first album was, Just Andre. It was like around 1969 or 70. Andre, they took a picture of him. He had an earring in his ear. And for the picture, Ralph Carmichael knew at that time that the whole church community, the whole America would just totally crucify this black, you know, artist. So he had him airbrush the earring out of his ear so that way it would be more palatable for the masses. And that's the kind of stuff that would go on.
Don, I don't know if this is really your topical matter. I just happen to throw it in there.
Whatever.
Why are you being so defiant?
I'm not being defiant.
I guess you never got saved.
You're asking an African-American...
I've been saved a couple different times, please.
I've been saved
a couple different times. You know it, too.
You're asking a highly educated African-American who lives in Nevada that he's not familiar with music and entertainment?
No, not with a little 5-year-old, 12-year-old kid who was back in the 1950s. That was a little before my time. But
it was in
the
1980s. And you were older than me.
Yeah, well, the bottom line is that in the 1980s, I became less old than you because I was having way too much fun.
Do you know who Kirk Franklin and Yolanda Adams is? Or B.B. and C.C. Winans?
I know B.B. and C.C. I've seen them.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles before, but I don't know
Kirk Franklin is a top black singer from Chicago, and Yolanda Adams is probably the best Christian singer in the last 10 years for women.
Probably he hasn't heard of Kirk because in gospel, in Christian, especially African American community like in Southern California, we know about him, but he's a choir director. He doesn't really sing. So he always has great songs, and he always gets these performances on the Christian Music Award stuff. But to the rest of the world, it's really unknown. It's a little bubble. And the problem with Christian music, we've always been 5 to 10 years behind what's popular. Like, you'll see, you know, metal groups go out, and then 10 years later you have Christian metal bands. You have people rapping, and then 10 years later there's Christian rap groups. And whatever's out there popular right now, you know, in clothes, in style, in entertainment, the church will pick it up, but it'll be about 10 years down the stream.
And right now,
I agree.
Some of my most popular music is Christian rock. I love Christian rock, but I'm not going to sit here and listen to Christian folk music like this Keith Kevin Green.
I wouldn't call
Keith
it
Green.
Folk music when he's on. He's on the
did
piano.
Did you hear the song? You just the song.
Okay.
You just, I mean, that can't be more folksy than that.
It's not folksy.
Did you play the song again and let's see? But
it's
let's
called contemporary.
I love my
it's
dog.
It's called contemporary. Okay, I have to go back
artist.
To it. Just I'm gonna play the sheep. I'm playing the sheep
that,
and the goats.
Hold
you
on,
said
buddy.
You were playing that at the
hold
end.
On. Wait a second.
Okay.
Before you play that, wasn't there a secular artist? His name was I think Dan Hill, and he had the song "Sometimes When We Touch, The Honesty's Just Too Much." And I have to
okay.
Keith has that kind of voice and that kind of piano persona, you know, as far as his style.
Yeah.
And we got
folks coming all through that song.
But a lot of it wasn't just his
who
music.
Died
it was,
who died and made you sophisticated?
Don? I hope you're talking to Don about that.
The point is, Keith Green's music was more than just his music. It was the things he would say between stuff. It was his persona. You know, some artists, it's not even so much a matter of their music. It's their vision and their message is so powerful. The music's just kind of a vehicle. You know, like the Beatles wasn't just music. It was their whole experiments with drugs and with, you know, life and attitudes towards government and things like that that, you know, catapulted them.
John, should I play Prodigal Son or Oh Lord, You're Beautiful, or which one should I play to convince Don
think,
that he was a great artist?
I think his style.
You better play the one with the. You better play with one with the alternative music lyrics and riffs.
Here, I got one. Okay, here we go you
ahead.
Guys.
Wait, before
on
you play, I have to stop you.
John,
about
wait
it,
till
no.
afterwards. I'm
but
getting
no,
crabby.
It's not going to connect with them.
Just a minute. Oh, shoot. Just a minute. I'm playing two different songs.
See, God's
sounds like Michael
to
Jackson
you.
To me.
God's
no, that was Yolanda
you,
Williams. I was playing
God,
a different one by... Oh, God. You guys are giving me a headache. Just a second.
Yeah, but
go ahead, John. Say what you got to say.
The point of what I mentioned before is his music is like vegetables, right? It's not sexy. It's not like, wow, I'm having a steak dinner, you know, whatever. It's you have to put basically put Don in a car where he's trapped, and you got it in the CD player, and he listens to it for 45 minutes on this trip that he can't get out of the car, and it kind of grows on you. So if you're trying to play a cut that's going to like knock him over, I don't think it's going to connect with him. Maybe
well, I'll play
five,
it at the Lubbock. I'll play it at the Lubbock, Texas internment camp when Jade Helm takes over. Okay, here we go.
I was gonna say, do it before July 15th. No, turn it off, no. You
I guess that one was probably boring too, right?
Oh, no, that enlightened me completely. Now I'm going to sue Elton John because he took his music from this guy. I'm going to go and sue Elton John now.
Don, you're on some masterful trip tonight.
No,
Yellow
I think...
Submarine.
Hey, all I'm doing is winging it because, as I said, I didn't even know what the doggone, I didn't know we were going to talk about Keith Green.
All the way back from being down.
It's Keith Green, not Keith Greeny.
Keith Greeny. Keith Colorado.
What would you like to talk about since we only have 15 minutes left?
No, we could, John, you can tell us a little bit more about Keith Green and Acidophilus Simmons and everybody else. That's fine. I'm good with it. I have no problem learning a little bit. I mean, now I know about Keith Green, so I never knew this guy before.
The worst part he died.
What we're learning tonight
he
is
died stupidly because of 9 passengers on a little plane full of food. God, he's not listening. He didn't listen to a word God was saying to him since he was 5 years old to 12 or whatever. Goofball. But go ahead, dude. I'm learning. So go ahead.
Right, and be sure if you do that to not put your 2-year-old son in the plane with you, you know. But I think what we're learning tonight, it's like the music awards. You know, you see some artists come on there, and you know it could be Justin Bieber, right? And half the adults will just throw up and go, "Oh my goodness, here's that dumb punk." And you'll have 50 million little teenage girls that are have his posters on their wall, and they'll die for him. So I think it's the same thing. You could play a Keith Green song, and there's millions of people that will connect. There's other people that'll go, it's okay. It's kind of a folk song, That's just the way the music industry is.
Before music got so rap oriented and so techno.
Blame it on rock and roll.
It was like Billy Joel. People just had their piano and their lyrics, They didn't try to pump up the song to any great relevance.
That's because the only thing they had was a landline and a television and a little talk radio.
You're saying the black artists ruined the whole thing for us?
That's what she's trying to say, isn't it? Yeah.
No, I'm saying that so many artists nowadays that they're not necessarily driven by talent. Like, I hate to say it, but Iggy Azalea, okay, she can rap well, big deal. I don't consider her a talent.
I think what you're saying is that before the technology, 30 or 40 years ago, you had to play piano and guitar and sing, be able to sing the notes, and there wasn't all this, all these tracks of different sound effects and music. And you really had to have your own talent. And I'll give you this example. I used to always say, more naturally talented, Michael Jackson or Elvis. And I'm a super humongous big Michael Jackson fan. But the point is, most people go, "Oh, Michael." I go, "Wait a second. Elvis did movies. They weren't that great, but compared to Michael's movies, he actually had a lot of movies." Elvis could stand there with a guitar and just sing a song. With Michael in general, you needed to have him dance and do a video and have a lot of props. And whereas Elvis could just stand there with a guitar and do a whole concert and people would love it. I'm not saying that Michael was less talented. I'm just saying that as a stand-up performer, Elvis was more old school and Michael was more the new generation of, technical electronic expertise and how to manipulate video. And it's just a different genre nowadays than what it used to be.
I agree.
Like old-time actors, you used to be able to have to do comedy, dance, sing, and act. And nowadays, you have people, they just play villains, or you have a guy that just can sing, or a guy that's just funny.
But you don't have that whole rounded, you know, old, you know, golden age of entertainment movie star that you could do everything. It's a different generation.
Well, you know, Michael Jackson, I don't really want to bring him into the mix because he was a dancer, kind of like, you know, how Britney Spears and Madonna has the whole entourage. That's like a whole different form of entertainment. So I don't really want to bring that comparison in tonight. But the thing is that I just took, I was a college student. I was only 23. I just took Keith Green in at eye level, you know, in my Christian walk to struggle. So, you know, what else can I say?
Well, he was more than just an artist, though. He was the voice of your soul, and he was a, kind of almost an they call it a you know, an intercessor or a figure you could point to and go, I connect with this. This guy represents me. He was like our you know, our spiritual politician or our spiritual priest. Really, kind of like a priest, you know, just this. All the things you wanted to voice and state and be, that's what he embodied. Not to come just, you know, playing some of his songs. It doesn't really connect that whole thing. It was like a whole mission. You know, just like the Summer of Love, it wasn't just about songs and music. It was about kids being upset about the establishment, about the war, questioning, you know, sexual values, experimenting with drugs, you know, politics, hypocrisy in government. It was more than just music, and that's the thing about Keith Green. He was just more than writing some pop songs. You know, he was a voice, a lightning rod for God, and that's why he stands with you to this day. It wasn't just his music. It was all, everything he stood for.
I think, yeah, Bob Dylan was more the contour in my soul. Keith Green was the fist inside my soul. John, why don't you, we've already been on the show for an hour and 6 minutes. I want to start wrapping up because I have some family business tonight. The thing is, John, why don't you say the three artists that influence your life the most, including Christian, or not including Christian?
I wouldn't include Christian because, for me, nothing is above me and God. I mean, for the most part, I don't envy anything. I've never been for want of anybody's possessions or anybody's personality traits, talents. I've never been envious of anything because I've been near there and I know what it takes and I know that I had it. So it never bothered me. But in terms of influence, I would have to say Sly and the Family Stone was my first personal influence because I was influenced by my mother's music, which was Mahalia Jackson and Nat King Cole and Louis Armstrong and Duke Ellington. These are the people that I grew up with in my mom's family in her genre. But in my personal space, it was Sly and the Family Stone first, and then group of England. Yes, they had perfect melody, lyrics, and kind of that urethral sound that I like so much.
Right, and they were technically excellent and well produced, you know, at a level that you didn't have, you know, with a lot of these 60s bands. They were very unpolished compared to them.
Most bands were unpolished, and Yes was technically superior to them.
Was Stevie Wonder up there or kind of in a different...
No.
Different
I was never into R&B, never into Motown, really, except for the Temptations, and until the Jackson 5 came, and then I did become a Michael a Jackson 5 aficionado. But
the gravitational pull of Michael Jackson is too much for most anyone to resist.
Well, I saw Michael Jackson. I followed him and the Jackson 5 and Jackson 6 for a little while. And I, in terms of concerts, I've seen virtually everyone in concert except B.B. and James Brown and The Who. And those are about the only ones. I mean, the other group that I was going to mention is Pink Floyd. Pink Floyd has come up with some of the most unique epic storytelling albums ever, besides Jeff Littell, you know, and The Who a couple of times. But Pink Floyd did it with such, again, urethral sounds. They had that melodic, euphoric, heavenly type sound in many, many of their songs. And I would have to say Animals, in fact, is probably one of my favorite albums of all time. But those are the three, because that's all you wanted me to say, three groups that probably influenced my music.
Well, you know, we don't have all night. I just wanted to get a feel for what influenced you in life.
I do take that. I have all night. No.
Well, I don't. I have to make macaroni and do geometry.
Common core geometry, which you don't know. You don't even understand it, so stop.
Riders, guess who one of my biggest influences were?
She
lives on Love Street, lingers long on Love Street. She has a house and garden. I would like to see what happens. Jim
Morrison. Was that
the Doors? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I read recently about the Doors? That they were more like a funky blues. They were not rock and roll. They had their whole their own style.
Oh, yeah. They were kind of almost like jazz artists.
Right. Exactly. Jazz singers.
Because musically, they were that, you know, they were well-trained. They weren't rock people. They were like, you know, they grew up schooled with the kind of jazz and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, and blues. And then they got this lead singer, you know, poet dude who wants to be rock. And it just all smashed together. And it was kind of, you know, a brilliant combination for the time era that they were in.
I've gained more respect for that band over the years. I've gained more respect for them.
So is Keith Green 1, 2, or 3 in your top three?
I'd say three.
We've been talking
45 minutes
about a guy
Bruce
you don't care about.
Well, Bob Dylan and Bruce Springsteen are 1 and 2, but for some reason I'm drawing a blank for my favorite female artist. TLC is my favorite group, but for my favorite female artist, I'd have to say I'll have to think about it.
I'm with you because I don't like any female artist because I can't stand women yelling at me.
What? See, whoa.
There you go.
Why did you get married then?
Because I didn't know I could stand it at the time. 31 years later, I realized I couldn't stand it.
Or maybe you needed it.
Oh, John.
It could be very
May
well
I
that
ask
second.
John a funny question while I'm looking up my favorite recent song by a female artist? John, does your boss still think that you're dating someone in the complex?
I think they still do because she had a 2-page form of instructions and things that I would abide by, like not to talk to anyone in the complex. I would never date anyone in the complex.
Your boss?
You know, this is like I dog sit, so it's not a normal traditional employer situation. It's a wannabe employer, basically. A wannabe Napoleon or Hitler is what I'm working for.
Okay.
Yeah, John left his bike at the job so he could walk over to the gym and call my show at 1:30 in the morning. And his boss put him on a moratorium. She thought that he left his bike in front of her property to go hook up with some chick in the complex.
I gotcha. Okay.
I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was hilarious.
And to which I replied, it's like, I'm working till 12. You know, I get home at 1 or 2. I got to get up for, you know, my day gig at 8. The only time I could talk, I can't even have a relationship with myself. And if anyone needs to call or contact me, I mean, they'd have to call me, you know, in the morning hours. How many people can outside of vampires and space creatures? So the funny thing about it is I came up with a list of my own instructions, like to not call me after work hours at, you know, midnight. Actually let me leave at 10 o'clock when I'm supposed to, because they milk me to do extra stuff. You know, things like that. In other words, I'll sign your little agreement if you sign my agreement. Like, no more personal messaging, picking things up, burning CDs, printing copies of reports for them, things like that. So I think we're going to have a Mexican standoff the next time.
I think she better stay out of your business.
Did she really did you really stand up for yourself, or did you form the list and not give it to her yet?
What I did is I formed the list. I sent it to her husband because it really, he's the one who pays, and it really affects him because I cover his rear end with all these little things I do. And plus, I like to help. I mean, it's no big deal to me. It's when people ask me to do favors and then they blow up on me. It's like, are you kidding me? You know, I'm the one holding you dangling over the building and you're giving me demands. So I basically told him, it's like, you know, once I send this list, she's an 8-year-old mentally. She's going to blow up on it. So are you ready for this? And he gave me the green light yesterday. He said, I'm cool with it. I said, okay, good. So I actually was going to spring it on her yesterday, but I wanted to have a weekend of peace and quiet. So I'm going to do it tonight. That way we can start the week, you know, with a blast. But, yeah, I'm all ready to go with it.
All right. So what are your three top songwriters? And we're done.
For me, growing up, I realized, you know, I was born in 59, so by the time I, you know, the 70s hit, I was just starting to really get into music. But basically, the influences of Larry Norman, because he was in the church, the only rock we could get our hands on. And then after that, Keith Green really hit, and mainly because at that time I was doing a lot of street performing and preaching. And he was just the voice of what we were trying to say. And then after that, I started to gravitate towards hearing secular artists because I wasn't allowed to growing up. And so one of my earlier influences was actually like Eddie Money, because I was in the Bay Area. I saw him on Saturday Night Special or Saturday Night whatever they used to have back then. I think Don Kirshner used to have a...
Wolfpack Jack.
And I saw him come down in concert, this guy running down the center stage with a tambourine, grabbing the mic and just owning the stage. And so it wasn't so much the music or he not having the greatest voice. It was just the persona spirit of, like, what a rocker was. That really knocked me off my feet. And then other artists such as, like, Todd Rundgren, who produced Meatloaf,
yeah.
And had a lot of, you know, he had a band of Utopia, and he had a lot of the philosophical ideas that were like, kind of like Jesus-like in a secular sense, kind of a Zen type.
Like that. Exactly.
Like we're all brothers, and you know, and sisters on the planet, and to seek love and forgiveness and that kind of stuff. He did the song "Hello, It's Me Again," "Can We Still Be Friends," and others that were just brilliant, but. From there on, kind of my biggest influence was the band Toto. And in the band Toto was the lead guitarist, Steve Lukather. And you may say, who's Steve Lukather? It's like he's probably been on more albums than really most any guitarist in the planet. And by that is like he played the rhythm guitars on the Michael Jackson Thriller album. It was basically Toto, the band, on that album, David Page and Jeff Porcaro on drums. It was the band Toto. And Steve Lukather, the guitarist, he played on like She's a Beauty by the Tubes, Lionel Richie's Dancing in the Night. You know, you could go on. There's like a couple hundred artists with number one songs that Steve Lukather has played lead guitar on. So he was a very big influence in me, you know, musically, when I, as far as an artist.
Yeah, because for, you just mentioned playing on soundtracks. And one of my favorite, probably about my fifth or sixth favorite band is Oingo Boingo with Danny Elfman. And they're fantastic.
And Danny Elfman, you know, did all the Batman, you know, the early Batman movies.
Mm-hmm.
He did the soundtrack to The Simpsons. Pretty much anything pop culture as far as music, movie soundtracks, Danny Elfman is somewhere in the mix, somewhere, you know, rubbing shoulders.
Somewhere.
Just brilliant, brilliant artist.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well,
and of course,
so
you know,
that was a good end of a discussion.
And, you know, with the bands that Don mentioned, he and I could probably sit in a corner in a bar. I would, you know, he might drink alcohol, I don't know, and I would probably be having a Shirley Temple. But then we would probably just be having something like a soda or milk or something. But the point is, we could probably sit and talk for a couple of days about just these artists, you know, Yes and Pink Floyd and you know, Danny Elfman, all these people.
Blue Eyes to Cult, and there's everybody coming down the pike back there in the 70s and 80s who really changed music. They really changed the way that music was listened to because they did it in groups. You know, there used to be music with Beethoven, Mozart, those people. You'd sit at home or you'd sit in a private place and listen to that music. But when you start talking about the Beatles and start talking about the Rolling Stones, you start talking about music en masse. And
I want to ask you guys, could I ask you a critical question?
Pop music.
No, I want to ask you a critique style question. On the Duluth Reader this week, they said, is Bob Dylan the Gutenberg of music? Because before Bob Dylan, all the songs were bebop, 50s-like. The lyrics were generic, and then he came along with his, you know, those two songs, Come Gather Round People, Wherever You Roam, you know, like those two songs that changed the world. And then everybody started talking about meaningful things in their songs. So was Bob Dylan the prime motivator for that change?
No.
Why not?
Because we had people like that before Dylan. They were mostly in jazz, but folk, but we didn't have bluegrass then or anything like that, which kind of morphed into bluegrass. But we had blues and we had country. And those were the singers who were singing in that poetic method, genre. So they were before Dylan. Dylan just synthesized a little rock with blues and country. But he wasn't Gutenberg, because Gutenberg turned nothing into something.
Well, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of a large concept to apply, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of it, too, kind of to follow up to that with you know, the music that Don was talking about, too, especially the blues and with black music, is that they were speaking out of, you know, slavery, speaking out of being discriminated against, a whole lifetime of abuse and neglect. So those are very powerful things. White America, not all of us experienced that or to that level. So music wasn't that kind of release for us. And I think with Dylan, he's kind of like Springsteen in the sense of I listen to stuff and go, okay, I can take it or leave it. But for the people that listened to it, he connected with what they were thinking and became a leader. I mean, if you look at Dylan's interviews, you know, where he's got the sunglasses on, he's smoking a cigarette, and they're asking him, you know, how many artists you feel are like you in the, you know, the United States? And he says something like 129, deadpan. And like as if he's just making, he's just BSing, right? He's just playing with the establishment. And he knew how to manipulate that. And I mean, in that way, he was brilliant. But he obviously connected and changed your life, you know, where you were at, Jane. You know, and for me, I missed that whole boat. I was still a dumb kid, not thinking politically or experimenting with drugs. I was still listening to gospel quartet music and Lawrence Welk and Hawaiian, you know, Don Ho and whatever else that my folks would play at home. So I think a lot of it just depends on how you're growing up, how music influenced times and what you were thinking is as to whether you connect with it.
Yeah. Well, I was going to end the show with a song by a modern artist that I like. So
no,
do you guys mind if... Well, no, because I wanted to play a female artist that I like that's newer. Her name is Rachel... Just a minute, I got to find it now. Rachel Faith.
Rachel.
What are your final thoughts, John, so I can play the song?
Oh, I would say...
Go for it.
What's so funny tonight? You guys are
strange. Went through 5 minutes. He just went through 5 minutes of great music and musicians, and then you want him to give him the final word. Go ahead.
Well, you know what? We don't got all night. Okay, dude?
That's what I'm saying. So throw the music on and let's go.
After speaking about all these profound people, then you want to bring in a new artist that you don't even know the name of.
They don't even know the name. Rachel.
It's Rachel Faith. Because I saw a movie recently and she was on the soundtrack, Evil Children.
So she became your favorite woman artist because she was on a soundtrack.
Well, I like Madonna still, but she's not my favorite anymore, okay?
Mm-hmm. That's fine. I still don't like any women yelling at me.
Women don't yell in songs, you bonehead.
Oh, yes, they do. I can't stand your ass no more, you bonehead.
I think you're talking about Tina Turner.
Or
maybe your wife. Your wife's
going to
come after
Tina
you
Turner.
With a frying pan. She's coming after you with a frying pan.
That's not the first time.
Or how about the voice of all angry females on the planet, Adele, who can sing, but nevertheless.
Chain
is probably one of my favorite female songstress.
Wow, I'm surprised. She doesn't grind on
people? Yeah, well, I mean, at least, like Kelly Clarkson, she could be one of the top three of my modern female songstress.
Oh, I love Kelly Clarkson. I forgot about her.
That's because they don't sing about love. People don't know about love, so why in the world are these little 18-year-old pop parties singing about love? They have no concept. They have no clue. They might have a first inkling about having a baby, but they don't know about love. And they're telling everybody, you know, 25 and under, what love is. That's ridiculous to me. It's like... It's like the boy you just mentioned earlier who's singing all these love songs and they're singing them to men. And I'm like I enjoy his singing. I enjoy his music and all, but the concept, I can't wrap my brain around it. But who's
right.
The guy you just mentioned, the guy who just won all the Grammys?
Bieber?
From England.
Sam Smith.
Sam Smith. He's a beautiful singer. Oh, I mean, got great lyrics. Everything is. I like his music because it sounds good, but doggone it, it's all about love, and it's all about love to some whoever. I'm not going to mention any genders, but it just is hard to wrap my brain around it. I'm sorry. I tried. He's a great singer. He's got great lyrics in his song. He's winning Grammys, so he's got that. But his subject matter is just, the same thing with Elton John. I know Norma Jean. That was probably a male counterpart to Marilyn Monroe. Who knows? You know, the bottom line is that it's hard to wrap my brain around it. I tried.
Really,
so
I
hard.
Love Elton. I love Elton John.
I used to love him when I didn't know what he represented.
Kind of.
Well,
the
are you saying that
notice?
You're anti-gays?
I didn't, huh?
No.
I didn't say that. No, I would never say that. I just said
what
I can't
does
rap
he represent that you don't? What does he represent that you don't like?
Who, Sam Smith or Elton John?
Elton John.
That's it. I mean, I've had big glasses before, so that's fine with me. I never had a pompadour like he's had, but, you know, and there are many, many things that I bother with. It's the same thing with Queen, with Freddie Mercury. I mean, my God, Queen is one of the great bands, you know, especially the 80s bands of all, you know, of them all. But Freddie was right there. I was right, you know, I saw what Freddie must have had to go through, and I didn't agree with it. I moved out of California because I didn't agree with it at the time. I didn't want my kids susceptible to something like what they were singing about. So it was easy for me to move to Reno and have this little wonderful time with my kids ever since.
Yes.
So, you know, that's just the way it is. I grew up in Wisconsin back in the 60s and 70s, and that just wasn't a part of it. That wasn't even a part of our thought.
I hear ya.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so,
John, what are your final thoughts?
So my final thoughts are, follow the truth unless it's following a celebrity on the way to bankruptcy court or an audition for the Jane Hoffman Female Vocalist of the Year Awards.
Sounds like Michael Jackson to me.
I can edit my show, you know, to block out your comments. This is...
You better start blogging because the baby's going on air soon. Huh?
This is my final thought.
I hate to hear this one. Go ahead.
Do I have good taste?
I didn't know she was from New Zealand.
This is Rachel Faith. I don't know where she's from. Oh, I know who my favorite female singer is. Amy Winehouse and Lorde.
Wow.
See, that's where I would get off the bus because, for example, with this gal, she can
thing, but her tone to me sounds real nasally or whiny. Now, Paul,
oh,
if I heard
the girl,
if
you
I heard
mean the one I just played?
One you just played.
Yeah,
now,
sounds,
and again,
sounds like one of those Irish balladeers.
Like Sinead O'Connor?
Like yeah.
Sinead O'Connor?
Yep.
There you
it's
go.
Like,
so,
okay,
yeah,
I like this style.
I probably, if I heard it 3 or 4 times, it might grow on me. But off the top, if I was putting together a band and she was auditioning, I would go, thank you very much.
Next.
It's a very interesting voice you have. And
next.
We'll be sure to call you back later.
Uh-huh.
I thought John would say he'd like the arrangement of the song with the use of the clapping hands as acoustics.
Wrong.
No. When you've listened to Yes and Rush and all that stuff, you know, we're talking double bass drums, you know,
exactly.
Complicated
everybody,
time rhythms.
Everybody's got
well,
16,
I have, here's
16
an idea, you
guitar.
Guys. I'm signing off, and you can keep talking, but I got to go make mac and cheese.
No, I got to go eat dinner. I'm almost.
Okay, well, John,
eaten.
good night, John, and let me know when the sledge. Where the sledgehammer falls on your boss tomorrow.
Oh, good, yes. It usually ends up this way. John singing all by myself from Eric Carmen.
Oh, my God. Then you better keep quiet. You better keep quiet. Don't confront her
John,
about the...
John, you're welcome to move to Duluth and rent my... You're welcome to move to Duluth and rent my room for $250 a month.
How big
is the room? I might do that.
It's gold, and it's about, I don't know, it's an average-sized bedroom. About
how many Lolos
you have
can
kitchen
fit
privilege.
In there?
Why, John, are you on the doghouse with Pat again?
No. I just need a place to get out so I can relax and take a breath sometimes.
Yeah, you could
and
come
you
here
do,
for a month.
You can't do that much better than Duluth. You can go out and you
right,
can take
if you
a
stay
14, nobody even knew.
If you stay 14 days, I won't charge you. If you stay 15 days, you have to pay the monthly fee.
That's fine.
I thought a place like that was called the Mustang Ranch. Maybe, I guess.
Kiss
not.
My grits. I charge for
it
that,
is.
Too. $100 for Poutang.
I think you better stop because you're.
I think
you're
John got.
Those people.
John detoured to the chicken ranch and Don went to the Mustang ranch.
Been there, done that.
And this is
How
supposed to be a Christian show. Damn it!
I know, and we're
and
reproduction is reproduction is the number one Christian value.
Haven't you read Song of Solomon? I mean, you know, if you stood up in church and read that in the middle with, you know, all the kids there in, you know, from Sunday school, people, and you didn't tell them, you know, who wrote it, and you didn't read it in King James verbiage, people would grab their kids and run out, and they would complain to the pastor that it's pornography.
There you go.
Okay, well, one time in Vegas, I ran out of money, and this man propositioned
Uh-oh.
Me in the hotel lobby, and I charged him.
Yeah, but did you do it?
No comment. The show's over. I'll see you guys
you
next week.
You actually did that? Oh,
what?
Hell no. Jay, are you crazy? What's wrong with you?
Here's the question. Did he ask for a refund?
Kiss my grip. The show's over. Good night.